Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And on the phone, I'm welcoming Zaz Hollander. And in the studio, I welcome both Terry Snyder and Mark Kelsey. Well, let's begin with a discussion this week of a Teletown Hall meeting. Happened March 23rd between 7 and 8 p.m. Borough manager and the mayor of the borough were located in Anchorage, and there was an opportunity to pre-register and call in, and it seemed like about hundreds of people participated, stayed for the entire length of time. The whole thing was involving a discussion, which was unusual, where you could ask questions of the mayor and the manager and also have them respond. Terry, let's talk about how previous meetings have been run and how well this one went on.
Kind of roll back the clock and know that the last public open house that the borough had to present their budget and talk to citizens about their concerns and ideas for the budget, they had six people in attendance. I'd say it was really, really, really successful. But for me,
six people in attendance in person?
Last time they did it in their borough offices. This time, several hundred people participated.
Nice.
And I think what's more important is that it's shown the borough, and the school district did this earlier without much public, any, you know, real promotion of a AARP mailed to 40,000 people in the borough about this event. But what it showed the borough is these type of meetings, these teletown halls, are affordable, and they're a good way to reach people. And I think if they can sort of, my hope is that they will start doing these on a, you know, couple of times a year, not just during budget time, but really show an ability and a want to listen to what people have to say, and people don't have to travel all the way into Palmer to do it. So I think it was well received and very successful.
Okay, and for those listeners who are just checking in, this is Valley Edition, and we have in the studio, of course, Terry Snyder, who's just been talking about a teleconference, a unique event in Anchorage. Mark Kelsey also here, and Zaz Hollander on the line. What would you say, just to finish up with this, was the most significant takeaway you had from the event that happened last night?
I think the most significant thing is kind of what I've known all along, is people do not understand property tax, and they don't understand what their property tax goes for. They don't understand why their mill rates are higher in some cities, maybe like in Anchorage. They don't understand that it's three times as expensive to maintain a gravel road as a paved road. They don't understand what it's what the lack of infrastructure and density does, trying to have less people burden the services and the facilities that you need for a growing borough population. So there is a lot of miscommunication. There are people that don't understand how the school budget works and what portion. A lot of them think that all of their property tax goes schools, which is completely wrong. It's less than 30%. Most of the money they see in that $256 million budget is actually pass-through money from the state and the federal government. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of jumping to conclusions. And I just think it's an opportunity for the borough to tell its story better. I think both the school district and the borough need to tell their story better.
Were there any unexpected questions or concerns?
Unexpected. And, you know, I don't think so, really. I think that the people that called in were really most concerned about. There was a lot of, you know, what's going to happen? What is going to get cut? And what are the repercussions if as we go forward? There were people that weighed in and said, I'm okay with you raising my mill rate if it's for education in schools. There were people that said, raise my mill rate no matter what. So I don't know if there was anything particularly unexpected, but I think it was just good for people to be able to, as Mike has pointed out, and when we've talked about it on air, normally you go to a meeting and it's a one-way conversation. You talk to the borough and the assembly, but they don't talk back to you. So this was actually a way to kind of exchange, you know, a conversation, as I say. So I think that was good.
Okay, Zaz, any comment about that?
I think any attempt to engage more of the public in an easily approachable manner, where people can ask questions is a good thing. It's intriguing that, I'm sorry, I missed the explanation, Terry. This was based in Anchorage, so people in Anchorage could also...
No. It's just that our offices are there. It was actually, we mailed out and publicized to Matsuboro residents. Okay. We mailed to about 40,000 people here in this, people in the state, property owners, basically, and members. And then we actually called people at the designated time at about at 7 o'clock. It was just an hour-long event, about 1,000 members, and people stayed on the line. I mean, people stayed on the line for 48, 50 minutes listening to the conversation. Wow. And it was Facebook Live, and a lot of people were watching it on Facebook, too. So a lot of moving pieces, but a lot of opportunities to, like you say, communicate.
And have you gotten any feedback?
I haven't looked at it very much this morning. It was just between 7 and 8 o'clock last night. So, I mean, I've gotten some feedback on my personal page that people were really happy that it happened and encouraging to continue on. So we'll see.
And you expect it to happen again then?
I expect the borough to take advantage of that technology.
Great.
And start using it. It's really pretty affordable. The cost of putting on public, people want and they talk about having more public engagement, but there's a cost to that. There's a cost to have staff. There's a cost to, you know, have your facility used. This way is very, very affordable. And that's what I hope the lesson they take away from it. So we'll see. Ball's in their court.
Well, it sounds as if I may just make two observations. One, that the technology allows for this to happen. This is intriguing in the sense that because we are a widespread borough, I mean, dispersed population, et cetera, getting everybody into one room and so on has its own inherent problems just by and involving a discussion. And if you can orderly arrange it so that people will have an opportunity to ask a question and get a response and have that be that flow happen, I suspect that the manager and the mayor come away from this feeling pretty good about it, too.
Yeah, just a sort of a side note, but kind of the same thing. Lisa Murkowski held a live book Facebook event yesterday.
Right.
Taking questions on healthcare, and it was hugely attended, I think. I mean, it was lots and lots of people. And she took, you know, you can only take a portion. In an hour, you really can't cover a lot. But at least it got interaction and got a lot of questions. And she was pretty forthcoming in answering those questions. So I think it's just a new frontier of how to communicate, just a different way and a new way to do it. It doesn't answer the hard questions. That's what reporters do. And that's they do a big job there. But it is just a different way to communicate.
Let's segue then, because there are two other locations, Washington, D.C. and Juneau, where there are some events occurring that are affecting our lives. And both places are arguably, from Palmer, Alaska, difficult to get to. Washington, D.C. is thousands of miles away. And Juneau sometimes feels as if it's thousands of miles away. Although this is what's intriguing to me. We're able, as we're recording this, you could step aside and watch the debate that's happening, live coverage of what's happening in the House of Representatives. You could also do the same thing with Gavel to Gavel into Juneau. You can watch the process that's happening on the floor. And you can even see those committee meetings, which seem to be very, very important in getting things in some fashion in order to be discussed on the floor of these bodies. But the piece that seems to be missing is the ability to have a conversation with important players where it's not one-on-one in an office or a room somewhere or a small group of people where additional questions can be asked and individuals will actually give you responses. I was very interested to watch as we led up to what seems to be an historic vote in the House of Representatives, how deft people are at not answering a question which is posed directly.
That's the world we're living in.
We have two news reporters, one in the room. We should ask them how do you get people to answer questions they don't want to answer?
Well, it depends on whether they're sitting in an active legislative session or not. Either way, odds are you're not going to get a straight answer, but it's all politics. It's all about getting elected or, you know, getting fundraising accomplished. But in those settings where reporters are listening, the people are listening, other politicians are listening, there's almost no room for honest debate anymore, which is one of the major problems we're having. By the time this program airs, we will know the results of the historic vote in the House on the repeal of Obamacare.
Right. And Mark, any comment to Terry's question?
Well, you know, I think Zaz pretty well covered it. But, you know, even when you get these people in a one-on-one setting, if they don't want to answer a question, they're not going to answer it. You can, and we see this all the time at the national level especially. You see a reporter ask a question and ask it again and rephrase it and rephrase it again and still get the runaround. So, yeah, that's definitely a big challenge of the business.
Conundrum not solved.
Right.
Well, that's where sources and the paper trail come in.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to me. Let's focus for a moment before turning a little bit to Juno to think about the scene in Washington, D.C., as the Speaker of the House gets down on bended knee, imploring our own representative, Don Young, the longest-serving Republican in Congress, to vote for his bill. Any reaction or thoughts about that, how Don Young has achieved that position of power?
just by virtue of
being the oldest serving legislator
continuing
there,
to win elections, right?
Persistence.
I don't think he's going to change his vote. He doesn't have anything to lose here, certainly. He seems to have been very clear to me anyway that his mind is made up. I don't see him voting for it.
Well, and it seems as if they're going to need more than Don Young to win this vote.
Well, isn't it also at the end of the day what you have to trade? And in some regards, so what would, I think normally a lot of those votes are won by something completely unrelated to healthcare that would say, I'll do this for you if you do this for me. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And without an infrastructure bill or anything else out there to dangle, this is a big lift. They've kind of boxed themselves into a corner. They had to do it first because they've been screaming about it for 8 years, but yet they don't have anything on the table to leverage with yet. And I think that's part of the problem. But am I reading too much into it, maybe?
No, I think that's right. I think there's also a big dose of the president wrongly and maybe arrogantly thinking he could just, you know, have his will, right, exactly, by, you know, pushing people around. And that has not worked. It doesn't help his cause that his own favorability rating is under 40 now by most accounts anyway. So, yeah, the president sure doesn't have a lot of juice to push his will on people at this point.
Well, as we're looking toward the vote, and obviously we don't know how it's going to turn out, what appears to be the case is this may be, I leave it to historians to dig a little more deeply into it, one of the least loved pieces of legislation that has come down the pike recently. I'm saying this by looking at some really respectable polling by Quinnipiac and others that point out that that there aren't too many people who like this bill. And certainly we've heard the description, whether you're in the Freedom Caucus or in the Moderate Caucus or there are very few. There are all kinds of people, organizations. We speak about various
and bipartisan opposition.
Bipartisan,
yeah.
These are not just Democratic bodies and people, but Republicans and all the rest that find that perhaps the kindest thing that would be said is that with some good intent, those who feel that changes should be made in the Affordable Care Act, this was way too fast a move. And if there's going to be a loser, although the president has apparently removed himself from the fray and said, I'm going to move on to something else. You need to do this, but it doesn't really matter to me because I'm going to focus on something else. The real loser could be the Speaker of the House, Mr. Ryan. In fact, some have even gone so far to say this is a lose-lose proposition. If it even passes slightly, it means that it will continue to be in the public's view as it's gnawed upon at the Senate. And then if it fails, and of course, a lot of people, Mr. Ryan in particular, said basically this is a must-have. We must do this. And if it doesn't happen, where does that leave him? So any comments, Mark, about?
Well, if the bill goes down, I don't think it will be a surprise at all that the White House will try and make it all about Paul Ryan.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know if it's a defining moment for him, but it's certainly a critical one for him.
Okay. So I'm wondering, though, as a side note to all of this, because I've heard a number of people that I've been just observing say they haven't spent this amount of time watching political things in...
Ever.
So
it's great theater.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm running out of popcorn.
Yeah. And people are... watching news, watching the live broadcasts.
And reading newspapers.
Reading newspapers.
Watching C-SPAN.
Right, all the rest of that. And although the focus right now seems to be in Washington, D.C., we do have Juno in play. And not only is the budget discussion moving along, but there are also a number of other topics that are being discussed. One that's coming up soon, I want to bring it up. I've talked to other people about it, is the whole issue of real ID. And when I throw out real ID and say that by June, if you want to enter a federal building or go onto one of the military bases here in Alaska, you're going to have an escort or a passport because your driver's license
won't do it.
And by January 18th of next year, if you want to get on an airplane, going anywhere within the state or without the state, if there's no action taken by the legislature, you will also have to have a passport or another form of federal ID.
Well, I think what's even harder for them to not do something is civilians won't be able to get on the military bases. That is a problem.
I think construction workers and others.
Yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Mark, you look like you have something on your mind about that.
I'm just curious: is that the bill that Bob Lynn was pushing?
Well, this is a bill actually that our own Senator Don Levy has suggested change to. You have to go back in history and realize it was the legislature that basically said you can't spend any money to make real ID happen. And there are about 20 states, roughly half the states in the country, have gone ahead and allowed their version of DMV to make the changes for record keeping and sharing of information that provides a real ID. One of the major proposals has been the option that if you go into a DMV to get your license, you can choose. If you want a real ID, you get it. If you want an ordinary one that's not doesn't fit, you could choose that. But in any case, the reason why this is becoming important, and the governor has in fact recently put out a press announcement about it, he's pushing it, that the legislature act, is because although we've been on a kind of waiver status for some time, it's running out. And so this is one of those issues that sometimes gets obscured because we have budget deliberations going on, and that's the focus.
But hasn't it been used in voter suppression efforts elsewhere? This sounds like an ALEC bill that was really designed to...
The real ID?
Yeah. I could be confusing it with something else.
I'm not aware of that.
Zaz, we need a lifeline.
Zaz...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not your lifeline on this one.
Well, my understanding that this has been pushed by Homeland
I think real ID is different than voter ID.
Yeah,
I think real ID is something that the Homeland Security has said it's sort of a local vetting for a bigger vetting. And most of the states adopted it pretty quickly, easily. And because, and I think this went back to the Parnell administration, dug in to say no, they gave us a few states a waiver while we worked out the politics of it. But as Mike said, we're coming to an end. I don't know. There's a large amount of states that have already adopted it. So.
Yeah, over roughly half.
So why would someone, given the choice between a real ID and a driver's license, why would someone not choose the real ID?
We don't have the real ID available yet.
Right, and that's the point. That could be one of the solutions. But the ACLU, for example, I believe, has stepped forward to say it just makes a one-stop shop for identity theft. If you can get that, you've got a lot of stuff happening here. And I just want to draw another line from that point to the recent federal legislation that appears on a fast track, passed the Senate, going to pass the House, it looks, and onto the president's signature that removes a number of the regulations that have limited corporations from following what you do with your cell phone, what you do when you're online. And these privacy regulations that had been set in place seem to be going away. Not quite yet, but about to. And when they do, I begin to wonder that the argument about real ID and its interference into your privacy becomes, in some sense, moot. Because if you're using a smartphone, if you're using a computer, much more is known about you than would be revealed through whatever is provided for your real ID. Just saying, though, that these things are moving along both at a federal and a local level. And it, as a listener or as you, if you don't happen to have your passport in hand right now, where you could say, well, it doesn't matter because if you have the passport, you're going to be able to use that. You may be very surprised when you try to do something that you thought you could do and won't be able to. Okay.
Good to know.
All right. Throw that in. Well, on a local level, I've had the opportunity to interview the mayor of Palmer and found her historical perspective to be delightful. Just a reminder that Edna DeVries started out with the Planning Commission many years ago and served on the council, served on the assembly, was mayor, served in the Senate, and is back as mayor of Palmer. Now, the reason why I mention all of that is because recently there was a visioning exercise, and Terry was able to attend that. I think when you have someone, for example, as mayor, and who's been around a while, they have a sense of the history. And the sense, if they participate in visioning, looking to the future, to me, that's a good sign. And just maybe a couple words to summarize what came out of the visioning exercise, Terry.
Well, I think they're taking a look at basically Chapter 3 of their comprehensive plan that lays out what their goals are for the city. I think they're starting to realize they need to look at what they're going to look like in 2025 or 2035 and try to figure out how are you going to deal with things that are going to come whether you want to change or not, electric cars, people's demand for more recreational opportunities, whatever it is. So it's a good thing. I think they had a beginning meeting on it. I think they're going to continue to make some changes to that document, recognizing it's a living document. It was a good thing. Good step in this to start anyway.
And I think it's the reason why I wanted to mention it, because we started out by talking about the use of electronics, electronic communication and the borough's involvement in providing opportunities for people to participate. I think this example of the city of Palmer, which allowed the council to meet as a committee of the whole, have people there to be able to engage in a discussion is very helpful, I would agree, particularly in this case, since there wasn't a major pressing issue. It wasn't the excitement or intensity because there was some burning issue that had been come up. But people were saying, okay, let's we have a moment. Let's take a moment before the problems arise and take a look at that.
Yeah, the burning issue was across the street there at the borough building with the trapping ordinance. We should let Zaz weigh in on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, because that was an interesting thing. Zaz, let's finish up with that.
Yeah, this was a historic trapping ordinance that was passed, 2 weeks ago, and then reconsidered, sort of pulling the rug out from under previously pleasantly surprised supporters of, and this was basically a prohibition on trapping in, I think it was 8, excuse me, public parks in the borough. One of the issues with the ordinance, as amended kind of at the 11th hour, was that there were 2 parks added that are not borough property, Matanuska and Reflection Lakes. And so it was kind of a flurry of amendments, and Nick Spiropoulos, the borough attorney, was having a hard time keeping up. And so it was at Randall Kowalki, assembly member Kowalki's request was reconsidered. And there was a fear among supporters of some kind of a ban that this would be and was a way for the assembly to change their vote. That didn't happen. They removed those 2 parks and passed the ban as amended, which, you know, for a lot of people here on both sides of the issue is a pretty big deal. There is still a statewide proposal sponsored by Andy Josephson that would address trapping on a broader context.
So, Zaz, did they add anything in the Willow area? Did Kowalki add anything?
I think it turned out, because there was, Kowalki wanted to add Trapper Creek and Willow, 2 places, and it may have been, I'm trying to recollect, but those were also state lands. I'm not sure, but at any rate, those were not added.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now it's 6 areas.
Right.
Good. Big deal.
Yeah, very one. And settled up with a lot of participation, and we're going to see how it's going to play out, whether as this moves along, whether it becomes an easy, okay, it's working, and there's no further discussion, or whether trappers are going to come back or others are going to come back and say we need to fix it even
more. I think I have not rarely seen an issue that brought as many people out as this one did, that gave such thoughtful, respectful testimony, even on both sides. There was a few trappers too, but mostly the people that really had done their homework, and but it was great to see that, you know, that's a growing entity in our community.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I think it was a tough argument for trappers to make, because most of them were saying, look, we don't trap in these places, but they want to protect their craft, their hobby, their industry as well. So they didn't, it was hard for them to give up some.
Yeah. Good point.
Okay. Well, once again, we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for being on the phone. Thank you, Zaz.
Sure thing. Good to be here, Mike.
All right. I want to thank Terry Snyder for being here in the studio.
Happy to.
And I want to thank Mark Kelsey for being happy here, too.
Have a great week, everyone.
All right. And we will look forward to coming together next week and pondering what the vote actually was. See you next week.